claims are encouraged to exercise their rights. This was brought to you in recognition of May Day, International Workers' Day, by LA Indie Media and KPFK.
Has progressive politics become captive to its imagery? That's the subject for discussion this week on Deadline LA. Join me, Barbara Osborne, at 7 p.m. right here on KPFK.
Hello, and thank you for listening to KPFK 90.7 FM. My name is Pilar Marrero. I'm the political editor of La Opinión newspaper, and I will be your host for today's edition of Beneath the Surface. Coming up at this hour, we'll be talking with former California Assembly Speaker and former candidate for Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa about the search for a new LAPD chief, and we will get his opinion on whether the city of Los Angeles should split up. And then, later on, we will have an extended discussion on how September 11th has affected immigration policy in this country. We'll be discussing a bill making its way through Congress right now that would abolish the Immigration and Naturalization Service and create something entirely new. That's all coming up after the latest news from KPFK's Justin Stinchka.
Thanks, Pilar. President Bush is ordering a restoration of normal trade relations with Afghanistan. U.S.-Afghani trade has been suspended since 1986. Bush said the order could contribute to economic growth and assist Afghanistan in rebuilding their economy. The order takes effect 30 days after it is published in the Federal Register. The group Human Rights Watch has issued a report after a week-long investigation in the Jenin refugee camp. The Human Rights Watch team said evidence suggests that the Israeli Defense Forces committed war crimes in Jenin. However, they also said that they did not find evidence to support claims that a massacre occurred in the camp. Microsoft company officials said they will likely pull Chief Executive Steve Ballmer from the list of defense witnesses scheduled to testify in its antitrust case. The decision comes less than 2 weeks after Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates took the stand to oppose sanctions from 9 states. The holdout states, including California, refused to sign on to a settlement of the case reached between Microsoft and the U.S. Justice Department in November. Authorities say pipe bombs that have injured 5 people in rural Illinois and Iowa are cases of domestic terrorism. 8 devices have been found and 5 went off. They were accompanied by anti-government notes. Mail deliveries have been suspended in some areas. The Archdiocese of Boston is backing out of a settlement with 86 people who have accused now-defrocked priest John Geoghegan of child molestation. The church's finance council says the deal would cost $30 million, and that's too high, considering the victim list is growing. A group trying to bring a pro football team back to L.A. has identified a lot next to Staples Center as a potential site for the new stadium. Tim Leitwicki, president of Anschutz Entertainment Group, told the Los Angeles Area Chamber of Commerce that in the best-case scenario, a team could be ready to play in L.A. as soon as 2003. California's largest petroleum provider, BP, says it will phase out the gasoline additive MTBE by December. The phase comes a year ahead of a state deadline. Although MTBE helps cut air pollution, it contaminates water supplies and may cause cancer. 3 years ago, Governor Davis ordered MTBE banned by the end of this year, but he pushed back the deadline in March. Now back to Beneath the Surface with your host, Pilar Marrero.
Welcome back to Beneath the Surface. I'm Pilar Marrero. This is KPFK 90.7 FM. Last year, I had the opportunity to cover the mayoral election for the city of L.A., one of the most interesting in recent history. From that election, Los Angeles got its new mayor, James Han, who has had to face some very tough issues. Secession, police reform, terrorism threats, economic slowdown. But there was another very high-profile candidate in that race that if he had won, he would have become the first Latino mayor in the city's modern history, Antonio Villaraigosa, We thought we'd call him back from his semi-retirement to talk about the things that are going on in the city. He's on the line with us. Welcome to the show, Mr. Villaraigosa.
Hi, Pilar. How are you? Congratulations on the new show.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here. Going back to last year, when you
Let me clarify something.
Yes.
I am not on semi-retirement.
Okay.
I've been, I said on election night that I was going to spend some time with my family, and I have my children and my wife, but I've also continued to stay involved in community as well. I'm co-chairing the biotech park around LA County, USC, along with Ed Roski, a biotech park that's going to bring about 8,500 jobs to East Los Angeles. I'm working in a private equity fund. During the campaign, I talked about using capital and pension funds to attract corporate investment to urban areas, and I've put together, along with a number of other people, including Ron Burkle, who's chairing the effort, a private equity fund to invest in the inner city. I'm teaching at UCLA a public policy class, and at SC I'm a visiting professor putting together a series of urban issues forums, and I've been on the lecture circuit all across the country. So semi-retirement is not an accurate depiction of what I've been doing, but certainly miss some of the action, if you will, but I have been pretty involved.
Yeah, I'm sorry for the choice of words. I know you, and I know you are always very active. you said last year that when you lost their election that you would eventually go back to elective politics. Lately, you've been seen around town a lot with some friends in the African-American community and others. Is this an indication of some political activity on your part in the near future?
Well, actually, I have been in South Central, but primarily around the 10-year after, if you will, the discussion, the conversation that we've engaged in over the last few weeks to see how far we've come, how much progress we've made, and how far we still have to go. So in the course of a number of tours and events surrounding the 10 years after, I have been around. I think more than anything, it's an indication that, as I said, semi-retirement is not for me. I'm still involved and still very much care about this city.
I will never say those words again. talking about the African-American community, we've always talked about how there seems to be a division between African-Americans and Latinos in terms of competing for political positions, jobs, and even the same neighborhoods. And last year, some leaders in the African-American community supported you for mayor, but most didn't. Do you think there's a future for a closer alliance between the two groups?
Oh, without question. I think much of what comes off as tension and conflict between Latinos and African-Americans have a lot to do with the scarcity of resources, with the paucity of investment in black and brown communities, and the scramble for the meager resources that are available to those communities. I can tell you that oftentimes there are conflicts that are real, but not any more serious than the conflicts between Latinos and the white community, or whites and Asians, or Asians and blacks. We live in the most diverse city in the country, and I think an example of where the world is going, or at least great metropolitan areas in the world will be going. And with that comes, you know, obviously the tension that that comes with ethnic differences. But I think there's a lot of things happening as well that where you can see that people are trying to work together. And if you remember in my race, many of the African-American leaders that were involved in my race were younger. I won about 40% of African-Americans under 40. There was a real energy. We had about 800 volunteers in South Central alone during the election, and many of them were from the African-American community. So I think the future's bright, but I think we also have to be candid, and where there are differences and points of conflict, we need to find resolutions and not just point to the problems, but try to figure out how we work together to overcome them.
Yeah, and one of the potential hot topics, talking about Latinos and African Americans, held the whole city, will be who will be the next chief of police. Back when you were running, you said that you would not automatically support a second term for Chief Parks. At this point, after all that happened, how do you feel about him, and what a future chief should be like?
Well, thank you for asking that question, because I was very, very concerned throughout the campaign and emphasized the need for reform of the LAPD. I was reticent to give an automatic support to Chief Parks, because I said at the time that before I could agree to reappoint him, I'd have to see a commitment to reform, a commitment to support the consent decree and implement its edicts, support for civilian oversight of the police department, of the Christopher Commission reforms, a restoration of the senior lead officers and a commitment to community-based policing, a support for a compressed work schedule, though, like Chief Parks, I opposed a three-day work week. I thought a four-day work week made more sense. And finally, the imposition of a discipline system that starts at the top, that holds people at the top accountable. If you recall, there were 67 officers implicated in Rampart, no captains, no lieutenants, no commanders, just the line officers at the bottom. And so I wanted that kind of commitment before I could agree to reappoint him. However, I must say that I believe that the chief did, in the end, support those initiatives. And I've said a number of times when asked that I think that the chief deserved a reappointment. I say that not because I think the chief is perfect, but I do think that the chief met the requirements that I initially outlined, and the requirements for moving in the direction of reforming of the LAPD.
So, but now he's basically gone, and we're looking for a new chief. What should that chief be like, and should he be a Latino?
Well, I think the points that I made earlier apply to any new chief. That chief has to be a leader who understands that the civilians and communities oversee the police department and not the other way around. He has to support the consent decree and community-based policing. He or she must have an ability to communicate to his officers or her officers, but also to the community at large. And most importantly, be someone who's going to be committed to working to making this a safer city. When I say that, I don't just mean putting cops on the street, but committed to prevention programs and intervention efforts, committed to stopping crime from happening in the first place and not just dealing with it, with the symptoms after it's occurred.
The other issue facing the city is secession. There's a great chance that the secession initiative is going to be on the ballot in November, the Valley, Hollywood, maybe even the Harbor area. What do you believe are the forces driving the secession?
I think there's a frustration in the Valley and throughout the communities of the Valley. I think there's a feeling that City Hall is not listening, that city government really doesn't respond to their needs and to their yearnings for a good quality of life. I also think, however, that some of those yearnings and some of that frustration is also prevalent in other communities. If you go to South Central and ask them if they're getting their fair share, I think they'll say to you that they're not. The same is true in Boyle Heights or Hollywood or San Pedro or Pico Union. I think the debate around secession should instead be a conversation. Instead of name-calling, calling the secessionist harebrained and stupid, as some have done, I think what we should be doing is acknowledging that some of their frustrations and concerns are legitimate and working with them to resolve it. Instead of saying that we're going to raise money to beat you back, we ought to be raising money to solve the problems, to fix some of the inequities that occur. We know, for instance, that in the Valley, they don't have the on a per capita basis, the libraries and library books, the cultural assets that some other parts of the city have. We know that their police and fire response times are lower. But they also have more parks and bigger schools, and so we have to look at all of those things as we engage in the conversation. And if we engage in a conversation instead of a debate, I think inevitably what will happen is people will start to look within themselves, not just to government, not just to City Hall, but look within themselves and see what they're prepared to do to make better neighborhoods, not just in the Valley, but in every part of the city.
Right now, there's at least one semi-declared candidate for mayor of the possible new city in the Valley, Richard Alarcón, the senator. He said that he's interested. Does this mean a new city could open up the chance for a Latino mayor that could not happen here in L.A.?
Well, I have said throughout the last few years, whenever queried, that I was born and raised in this city. I've lived here my whole life. This city's given me more than I could have ever imagined. I haven't changed my mind because I lost an election last year. I still feel very strongly that we got to keep this city together, that L.A. is to the world what New York and London were in other times, and that we need to realize that destiny as a city and come together and invest in one another. And so, I don't support secession. I respect and understand the frustrations that people have with respect to the quality of life in their communities, but I don't think breaking up this city is automatically going to change that. And so we'll see what happens in terms of an opportunity to elect a Latino mayor. I think what the Valley wants and what the city of Los Angeles wants is a leader from any community that can bring us together and begin to grapple and tackle and solve the problems that face us.
So if you're so passionate about fighting secession, would you be willing to campaign actively? I just talked to the mayor a couple of days ago. He was visiting La Opinion for a meeting with the editorial board, and I asked him if he would be willing to use somebody like you to fight the secession movement. Has he approached you yet?
Absolutely not. But I have made it clear through council members and friends of the mayor that I'm prepared to stand along with him to keep the city together, to work as tirelessly as I did in running for mayor. I didn't run for mayor because I wanted to be mayor. I ran for mayor because I wanted to bring the city together and take it to a new height. And I just think it's essential that all of us come together to keep the city together. And I'm prepared to do my part.
The other great challenge facing L.A. is education. What is your opinion of LAUSD's Superintendent Roy Romer's work so far?
Well, I think I don't have a day-to-day, opportunity to be able to evaluate the superintendent's performance. But I can tell you that, well, there has been, I think, better leadership there. There still seems to be an inability to unite teachers and parents to work toward a common goal. I think there's still too much bureaucratic waste and inefficiencies there. I've said that I believe that we should effectively decentralize the school district, but I'm not sure that the way they've done it is really decentralization, at least in the way that I think you need to have effective schools. I think what you have now is 12, little bureaucracies, instead of a real decentralized school district where neighborhoods and parents and teachers are making decisions. So, I think you'd have to say that there's a mixed result here, and that the performance of the school district leaves a lot to be desired.
So,
by the way, it's a big reason why people talk about breakup. And they should know that no matter what you do with the breakup of the city, it's not going to impact the performance of the school district. And so, you know, I think we really need to make a priority turning around our schools. If you remember, I was the first person to really talk about education and the mayor having a responsibility and a bully pulpit to help to build the 100 new schools that we need, to implement the after-school programs, to really use that bully pulpit to get the community, the business community, and involved in our schools. And I feel strongly about that, because when you think of a great neighborhood, you think of a great neighborhood public school. It's the pillar of a great neighborhood. Well, and while that's true for a neighborhood, it's also true for a city. Part of why so many middle-class people have left Los Angeles and gone to surrounding areas is we don't have a school district where we can send our kids with a confidence of knowing that they're going to be able to achieve. And so while there are, you know, places where the achievement is occurring without question, the school district still isn't performing on a level that we need to. And I think it's a big reason why people feel so frustrated about the quality of life in this city.
I saw you a couple of days ago. You participated in a march, May 1st.
Were you there?
I saw you on TV.
Uh-huh.
It was about immigration rights. Do you think the immigration rights have been lessened after September 11?
Yes, I do. I was heartened by the discussion in the Congress and in the White House about a legalization program. I was heartened by the new rhetoric that you know, once again began to embrace immigrants as contributing to our economy, to our social and political and economic fabric of the country. It was a little bit of a different a paradigm shift, if you will, in terms of the rhetoric. And since September 11th, unfortunately, I think what you've seen is a retrenchment. We're not talking about regularization or legalization any longer. We're talking about, you know, getting the Justice Department to work with police departments to enforce our immigration laws. We're talking about, raids, immigration raids in neighborhoods and workplaces again. I just think that's the wrong way to go. The people that come here have come here for a better life. Bilal, you heard me wherever I went, wrap myself around this flag and this country, wrap myself around the idea that this is a great place. Well, it is a great place, but I think it's incumbent on all of us, and that's why I was there the other day in downtown Los Angeles saying, look, we have got to accept the fact that the people have come here, they're working here, they're contributing to the economy of this country, their kids are going to school here, they're succeeding here, they're creating businesses here. A legalization program that reflects that makes sense for this country and is in the best interest of the country. And so, you know, the fact that there's been a retrenchment on that dialogue, I think, is disturbing. The fact that we've even gone beyond that, and a Supreme Court made a decision in the Hoffman decision saying that the undocumented have a right to organize, they have rights under the law in the workplace, but they don't have remedies under the law, which means they don't have rights. And so that kind of retrenchment, that kind of backsliding, if you will, was why I was there, standing with those many immigrants, some of whom were undocumented, most of whom weren't, but all of whom are very concerned about the backsliding on this administration since September 11th on the issue of immigration.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Mr. Villaraigosa. This was Antonio Villaraigosa, former Speaker of the California Assembly, former candidate for mayor, and he is not in semi-retirement.
in semi-retirement, and always happy to be on KPFK. It's a great place to engage in the kind of dialogue that's often missing in the body politic, and I'm just happy to be on your the show once again. And, of course, happy that they were enlightened and smart enough to add you to their repertoire.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk to you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to be talking to some of the people who know what's going on with the INS splitting up and the whole issue of immigration policy after 9/11.
Today on Latino USA, Latino gangs in Los Angeles are on the rise again. But this generation has found new ways to bring fear to the streets. That's today on Latino USA, the radio journal of news and culture.
Join us for Latino USA tonight at 7:30 on 90.7 FM, KPFK.
This is Pilar Marrero, hosting Beneath the Surface on KPFK 90.7 FM. And now we're going to turn to immigration and the changes in that area since September 11, because last week, the unthinkable happened. After years of ignoring the problems of the Immigration and Naturalization Service, Congress actually made a step towards reforming this agency. The INS suffers from chronic inefficiency, but also it has the very difficult task to carry out the complex immigration policies of the United States. The House voted on a bill to abolish the INS and create two new agencies to take on the enforcement and service tasks that until now were done by the same one. There's a similar bill coming up in the Senate. To talk about this, we're going to have Angela Kelly from the National Immigration Forum, which is a pro-immigrant advocacy organization in Washington. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Thank you, Pilar.
One of your concerns, when I talked to you a couple of days ago, one of your concerns with the House bill is that it gives power to two bureau chiefs, mm-hmm. one for enforcement and the other for service, and they would depend on a new assistant attorney general. You believe that could end up perpetuating the problem of having two agencies going in a different direction.
That's right. The House bill is a very strong start in restructuring the INS and finally tackling a long overdue problem of an agency trying to administer such a large amount of laws and many mandates and really not having the resources to do it. But where there is a shortcoming in the proposal that the House of Representatives passed is that it creates these two separate bureaus, as you mentioned. But the person who oversees the two bureaus has a very fancy title, but not really a lot of authority. It's an associate attorney general who doesn't have any direct supervision over these two bureau chiefs. The statute actually gives the authority directly to the bureau chiefs. It doesn't give it to the associate attorney general, who then delegates to these two people. Our concern, quite frankly, is that because they don't have sufficient authority, because they won't be able to act with enough clout, and they won't be able to coordinate the work of service and enforcement, that we could end up with two bickering kids and really no parent with authority to discipline them. And we could see ourselves in a position that's not a whole lot better from where we are now. There is another proposal that the Senate is considering, as you mentioned. It was a recently introduced bipartisan piece of legislation that's got on it Democrats and Republicans alike. Everybody from Hillary Clinton to Jesse Helms is on the bill. And so we think that's a solid piece of legislation that addresses the problem that I just mentioned to you. But at the same time, it follows many of the paths that the House bill creates. It does abolish the INS. It does create two separate agencies. But it does it in such a way that we think is much more thoughtful and more likely to result in success. There are some months left in this congressional session, and there is a chance that the stars could line up the right way and that we could actually see an immigration reform legislation, an INS reform legislation actually passed and signed into law. But, you know, here in Washington, it's pretty tough to make laws and actually get them enacted, so we'll just have to keep our fingers crossed.
But this is, of course, this is not the first time there's been talk about reforming the INS. In the mid-90s, there was that commission headed by Barbara Jordan that recommended some profound changes, including splitting up the INS.
Yes, that's right.
But what happened, what Congress and the President did, was they did this whole bunch of laws, like the anti-terrorism law, the welfare law that included some immigration provisions, the very strict